You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Babylon 5 ended a great war and united 100 alien races in peace. Danger didn't die. It just went underground with new heroes and new evils to carry the torch.
We need to make sure they all understand we will not be intimidated.
What is wrong with you people?
We have to set him against himself.
It's an entire new season of Babylon 5 with all new episodes.
And so begins.
There is a hole in your mind.
What do you want?
No one here is exactly what he appears.
Nothing's the same anymore.
Commander Sinclair is being reassigned.
Why don't you eliminate the entire non-holo?
I was a void head, reaching out of the star.
Who are you?
President Clark has signed a decree today declaring
martial
law.
These orders have forced us to declare independence.
I saw people get off their encounter-suited butts and do something.
You are the one who watched.
To Zahadu, who will die.
Why are you here? Do you have anything worth living for?
Think of my beautiful city.
Giants in the playground.
Now get the hell out of our galaxy!
We are here to place President Clark under arrest.
Turn around. Very, very slowly.
Hello, Mr. Garibaldi. Good to see you again. I was wondering how you were doing. Have you written, called?
Shut up.
Obviously haven't improved your manners.
Hello, and welcome to the Epsilon 3, a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. Each week, we review an episode of the 1990s sci-fi TV classic, Babylon 5. This week, Season 5, Episode 6, Strange Relations. I'm Paul.
I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And we are the Epsilon 3.
And the synopsis. The command crew are put in a difficult position when a unit of Psycops, led by Besta, comes to the station to arrest the colony of telepaths. Written by JMS and directed by John C. Flynn III, this episode was released on February the 25th, 1998, and takes place from May 23rd to May 24th, 2262. And our guest stars are Clynell Jackson III as security guard, James Liu as Bloodhound Teep number 1, Stephen Lambert as Bloodhound Teep number 2, and Clark Coleman as telepath. Uncredited are Bill Blair as alien, Christina Gavin as telepath, and Layla Huff as Neuron Cadet. So guys, what did we think of this episode?
Well, you forgot to mention Walter Koenig as Bester in the guest stars. And I think even he could not rescue this episode. He wasn't his usual smarmy self. He tried, but the writing wasn't there. If it's possible, this is worse than last week's episode.
Always possible.
The only good thing is that we learn, I think we already learned, that John and Lockley were married briefly. Did we already know that?
No, I think this is the reveal, isn't it? I mean, this is the big thing. So,
okay. Maybe I knew that because I'd watched this before, but it didn't feel like a big shocker.
Yeah, you knew there was something and it was going to be, I thought it was going to be they had a relationship before that. I wasn't expecting them to actually be married, but yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and the telepaths singing the Christmas carols or whatever they were doing with the candles at the end, the long-haired hippie freaks, I don't know. It didn't make any sense. Maybe they were happy that they survived for 60 more days, spoiler alert, but oh, what garbage. Friggin' Byron.
So Dan, what did you think of this episode then? Is it living up to everything that Sean had led you to believe?
What he said. Oh God, this episode. I was so utterly bored. Like normally I watch it all the way through, didn't make any notes, just want to immerse myself in the episode. Then I go back and make my notes. Just didn't do it this time. I just watched it enough and I was like, yeah, I've got enough. I think I'm okay with this. Yeah, Sycor turns out, yeah, Bester, he was just evil. There was no smarm. There was no gray areas. There was none of his usual little deception and stuff. He was so obviously evil. It just wasn't enjoyable. Even as, you know, Walter Koenig tried his best, I think, but he really just had nothing there. And you know, Leeta is sort of falling in love with someone who is completely personless, has no personality whatsoever. Okay. Just don't get it. And yeah, all singing Kumbaya at the end, that I think that was just the icing on the really big poo cake that came out of this episode. I just didn't enjoy it. I suppose I could say it is competent in when we're talking about Jakar and he's being given his extra duties, because that sort of comes into this episode, right? I'm not thinking of last week, am I?
No,
he's given he's given the bodyguard job for Londo.
That was the only good part.
That's the one interesting thing in the entire episode, and it fits the character and it fits with everything we know is coming with all of the future flash forwards and all this sort of stuff. Now we know why Jakar is in the royal court at that time, years and years in the future. So, you know, that is intriguing. Why wasn't that the big part of the episode, that there was like this back and forth going on? I think this could have been stretched out over what was a very dull episode.
And even when Londo's ride home exploded, we never got any blowback from it. Like, he didn't freak out. Nobody freaked out. Everybody said, oh, yeah, that was the ship Londo was going to take home. But that was it. Nobody cared.
Yeah. Yeah. Where was the outrage of Londo's? Like, this is outrageous. You let this thing in and it could have exploded. Oh, blah, blah, blah. This could have been a really interesting episode. And maybe have the telepaths redeem themselves by they picked up on some guy on board who was carrying the bomb from miles and miles away, proving that they're these super-duper telepaths who can read from far, far away like Leeta can. Or something, just to prove why these guys are important, why the Psi-Corps actually give a damn about these 20 or so people who are just refugees who are being hunted down, which is not a nice, you know, oh, let's go spend 45 minutes on Babylon 5. I really don't want to do this. I don't want to watch it.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, it's not a good episode, this. It's just, there was nothing. There was nothing in it. Nothing really happened. There was a sort of an understanding at the end with Lockley and Garibaldi, which was sort of good, because I don't think I could go through another season of Garibaldi running around hating somebody and, yeah, have, you know, lock heads now and again, have a bit of banter or whatever. But it just, no, please, come on. Garibaldi's a better guy than this. And we can't see grumpy Garibaldi all over again. Yeah, the Malari and Jakar inserts were good, but were the only good thing. I can't stand this Byron guy. I see what you mean, Sean. You've been saying about wait till you get Byron, wait till you get Byron. I mean, even his long, beautifully blonde hair and his beautiful British accent, I just can't do it.
They've all got long hair. Did you notice? Except for the one Asian guy, everybody's got long, flowing locks. And that's their only defining characteristic. And they don't talk and they just have deadpan faces, like Dan was saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get to the review quickly.
Please.
Yulen bumps into Captain Lockley and we finally understand what the last scene of the previous episode was all about. Enter the clip here at the beginning. But Yulen forced the issue. Except Michael Garibaldi has heard the entire exchange. Zach finds Londo Malari looking at a ship that has just docked. Malari knows that he will soon be Emperor and he's not looking forward to it as he knows how it will end. Meanwhile, transport 11719 has turned off its autopilot and they are having navigational problems. They have a systems failure and they have to pull back away from the walls, but unfortunately the docking doors cannot be opened in time. The ship collides with the doors and explodes. And that's the most exciting thing that happens all episode. All the transporters outside the station are becoming impatient, waiting to come in, but there is so much debris inside the station that it will take 11 hours to clear up. Yeah, there's probably loads of dead bodies floating around as well. I mean, come on, guys. Just hang on a minute. Yeah. Clean up.
Well, you know, it's a good thing this ship exploded or Londo would have died too.
Well, that's right.
Mm. Very lucky.
Leeta is caught by Dr. Franklin stealing medical supplies for the telepaths. Leeta believes in them, as Byron has a dream for all telepaths. Leeta takes the supplies to the telepaths, and Byron is grateful.
He says he hasn't slept in 3 or 4 lifetimes, and then spouts some parable crap about trees, rivers, and women and stuff.
Some parable crap.
Just then, he's going on and on. I was halfway through, I'm not even listening to this.
I kind of blanked out too. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense.
I was halfway through and I thought, what is this a story about his past? And he says something about a parable. And I thought, oh, it's a parable. Right, okay, it's a parable, whatever. I was going to fast forward it. Just then, he senses something. A presence he has not felt since. Bloodhound units. And they are being led by Alfred Bester. When Garibaldi learns about this, he rushes to see Bester talking to Captain Lockley. He starts to make some threats, but Lockley tells him to back off and after pushing him away twice, punches him and then calls security and tells them to take him to the brig. Delenn and Jakar ask Dr. Franklin if he could delegate some of his responsibilities. They want him to put in some definitive work in interspecies transmission of diseases. They basically headhunting him, to which he agrees. Jakar says he feels like he's not doing enough for the Alliance.
He will be a fine addition to our team. Very fine.
I agree. So why are you troubled?
I do not feel as if I am doing enough for the Alliance, Delenn.
Be careful, Jakar. When the universe hears you say something like that, it tends to answer in the most surprising ways.
Sheridan is not happy with Captain Lockley. But Lockley explains that although Sheridan has given the telepath sanctuary, it does not make them immune from prosecution. The Psycops want them on a variety of charges, and they are still part of the government to which Lockley is accountable to. She has to treat Bester like an ally. She cannot judge him on the previous relationship he has had with Garibaldi and Sheridan, and Sheridan reluctantly agrees. A Centauri cruiser that has been waiting for Malari is having to leave as they cannot be delayed any longer by the salvage crews. They've been cleaning up after the destruction of the transporter. As they turn to leave and set in a course for the Centauri beacon, the ship explodes. That's two in one day. That's pretty poor. Zach finds evidence of a chemical explosive and a detonator. The bomb was programmed to explode when the navigation system was set to Centauri Prime. As she looks through the status reports, Lockley spots that Garibaldi has accessed her personal files, and she goes to the brig to ask him about it. The 1980s pop band, Bester and the Bloodhounds, are looking for the telepaths when he bumps into Leta, who tells him that they are not here. He finds this suspicious, as it should be a very busy place, and then realizes that he is being blocked by Leta. He tells one of the bloodhounds to look in the area behind her, but she psychokinetically slaps him in the face. Bester reminds her that he is a duly authorized officer of the law, of the Lure, you know? I'm an officer of the Lure. And she slaps us at that. Peter Sellers. I can't remember the name of the film now.
Pink Panther.
Inspector Clouseau of the Lure. Yeah. And she slaps him a second bloodhound. But it is taking it out of her as she does it, and Bester spots that. However, he says he now has allies on the station and says he will come back with lots of security guards that she can't control all at the same time, and leaves. Byron turns up and thanks her for what she has done, and she tells him that they need to leave now. Lockley and Garibaldi thrash things out in the brig.
All right, Mr. Garibaldi. Either we thrash this out once and for all, or one of us is going to go. And I can assure you, it won't be me. As far as I'm concerned, you can do your job just as well on Mars. Now, you have been riding me since the day I got here. What the hell is your problem?
For starters, I don't know you, therefore I don't trust you.
The world's full of people you don't know.
I worry about that all the time.
Tough. Get over it. What else?
He asks why she is so friendly with Bester.
I was stationed at an Earth Force base near a mining company several years ago. A rogue telepath was messing with my people, first cheating them in the casino, and later he killed two of them because they found out what he was. We couldn't find them. Bester did. And he saved the lives of two of my crew. Now, I don't actually like him, and I sure as hell don't trust him, but so far he has not done anything unpleasant to me. I'm sure he will, because this place seems to bring that out in everyone. But until then, I have an obligation to be courteous.
Everyone needs a hobby.
And I have an obligation to shove his face through a bulkhead.
Your hobbies are your concern, Mr. Garibaldi. Just do it where I can't see it, and do it quietly.
Thanks. Now for the big one.
He asks why Sheridan picked her to run this place.
There's something between you. What is it?
Is that why you went ransacking through my personnel file? Looking for something that I'm holding over the president? Blackmail or some covert political agenda? Are you really that dead inside that you can't even imagine another reason? All right, obviously, we got off on the wrong foot. Maybe it's my fault. I crawled up your butt more than a few times when I got here. Maybe it's your fault.
Sheridan wanted a symbol.
Yeah, it's definitely more your fault than mine, but I'm here because Sheridan wanted a symbol. Somebody who was on the other side. He figured it would bring the folks back home together. He also wanted someone he knew he could trust. Someone he didn't have to worry about sandbagging him or stabbing him in the back when he wasn't looking. Someone who would argue with him when necessary, but would back him all the way when he was right.
And that's you?
That's me.
Why?
They both wanted to be in charge at the same time.
I can't leave this room.
I'm the soul of discretion.
A very long time ago, Sheridan and I were married for all of about 3 months.
Get out of town. How many wives has he got?
Just three. We met fresh out of officer training school. We hit it off, fell crazy in love, got married, realized we'd made a terrible mistake, fell crazy out of love, and split up. You see, in a relationship, you gotta take turns being in charge, but we both wanted to be in charge all the time. We had arguments that could peel paint off the wall. But it was over a long time ago. He's not carrying a torch for me, I'm not carrying one for him. But the bottom line is, he knows he can trust me. And I know I can trust him. And that's why I'm here.
She will keep Garibaldi in the brig until Basta has left. She then gets a message saying that security have been given the all clear to round up all the telepaths, and this order comes from Earthdome. Lita is walking among the corridors, watching telepaths being arrested, when she gets a call from Byron telepathically. Half of his people have been captured, so he is saying goodbye. She wants him to stay. He could stay with her. She could hide him, but he refuses, as his people need him. Lockley is bringing everybody up to speed on the telepath situation, but as they have been keeping their noses clean, she can't find a reason to stop them from taking the telepaths. At the end of the meeting, Franklin tells her about Delenn's approach. He tells her about the cross-species diseases, and this gives Lockley an idea. Meanwhile, the hunt for Byron is still ongoing. Two bloodhounds find him and capture him. Delenn and Jakar are talking about the attempt on Malari's life. Delenn says he needs better protection, and Jakar talks himself into becoming Malari's bodyguard.
I was thinking about what you said the other day, about wanting to serve the Alliance more than you do, which is already considerable. As you may know, the cruiser that was going to take Londo back to Centauri Prime was sabotaged and destroyed. He has many enemies in the Royal Court.
He has many enemies everywhere. It's what he does best.
If we lose the Centauri, we lose one of our most important allies. So we cannot allow anything to happen to him.
I agree. He should have a bodyguard assigned to him at all times while he is there. Someone we can rely on. Someone we can trust. Someone strong. Strong enough to. Oh, you can't be serious.
And he will have to be in the Royal Court.
Just think what a symbol it would make to have a Narn guarding the life of a Centauri.
Yes, it will mean my people will now have two targets to shoot at instead of just the one.
Or they will learn from your example. The Alliance is about learning to overcome our distrust and form a new community. Can you think of a better symbol?
No, and I'm trying, believe me.
You would naturally have to accompany him on all state business and be there to guard him in the palace, in the royal court.
A Narn in a Centauri royal court. It is a curiously satisfying image, Delenn.
Yes, it is.
All right, Delenn, I accept. If only to see their faces. Thank you. This is the greatest challenge of my life. Why I'm thanking you for that, I don't know, but there it is. Thank you.
Byron has been caught, but there has been a complication.
What complication?
These telepaths have been traveling around for upwards of 3-4 years. They've been in and out of every federation in the cluster. Hell, they've been to planets that aren't even on the charts.
They're drifters, Captain. It goes with the territory.
I understand, but we can't turn them over to your custody until they've had a full medical workup. We have to make sure they're not carrying any unidentified viruses.
You can't be serious.
Earth Alliance Medical Routine number 725-IT7. Dr. Franklin just hit me with the paperwork a couple hours ago.
They have to follow the rules just like Basta.
No interstellar traveler who has been in unknown space shall be allowed within the borders of Earth Control space until after a 60-day quarantine period. I have to follow the rules, Mr. Bester, same as you.
So you're saying I can't take them?
I'm saying you can't take them now. Look, I'm just as distressed over this as you are. Come back in 60 days and they're all yours.
Which he reluctantly agrees to. Byron's people have all been freed, and Leeta is happy. Malari is astounded to find out that Shikar is his bodyguard.
Shikar? You assigned Shikar as my bodyguard?
Yes. I think your generosity in working with him will be an excellent symbol of unity for all the other races who have joined the Alliance.
A symbol?
Yes.
Did you try this line on Shikar?
I did.
And did it work?
Completely.
Great maker. All right, Delenn, but mark my word, this is going to be trouble.
Everything of value is, Londo. Have a good flight.
I want the aisle seat.
Oh, no, no, you sit on the inside. I want the aisle.
If you sit on the aisle, I cannot protect you.
But I don't like the inside. It's too cramped. I become nauseous.
I'll make sure they have a supply of space sickness bags.
And Lockley finally remembers to release Garibaldi from the brig as the telepath choral choir sings us out of the episode. For no apparent reason.
I will guide you. My love will hold you. And my love will show you the way. There will come a tomorrow.
But you know what does have a reason? This promo for another podcast right here on the ESO Network.
He does this on the spot, you know. We don't rehearse this.
It's true.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And we're inviting you to join us as we delve into the dawn of the DC. We'll be reviewing new titles such as The Unstoppable Doom Patrol, Shazam, Green Lantern, Titans, Justice Society of America, and more. We'll also be reviewing DC Television's final season of The Flash, Titans, and Doom Patrol. Join us every week on the Earth Station DCU Podcast, part of the ESO Network.
Okay, and on to the trivia. And there is none. So, Sean, are there any Star Trek connections?
As a matter of fact, we've got a few. Yes, we do. All right.
I'll do that again. And on to the trivia. Well, that was the show. The whole show was trivial. Anyway, are there any Star Trek connections?
Clynell Jackson III, who played the security guard, he played Ben Sisko in Star Trek Odyssey, which I guess is a fan film. He played Colonel DeGuse in Star Trek The Helena Chronicles, which I guess is a fan film. He was the voice of Vor in Starfleet Academy, a video game. Also, he had roles in Star Trek Judgment Rites and Star Trek 25th Anniversary video games. So, kind of tenuous, not really, but kind of in Star Trek. James Liu, who played Bloodhound Teep 1, did stunts in the 2009 Star Trek film, and he was also a Romulan, and he was also a stunt coordinator on the Voyager episode Tsunkatsi, the one with the rock.
Nice.
And then we've got Stephen Lambert, who played Bloodhound Teep 2. He was a stunt player in Star Trek Insurrection.
Lots of them this week. Makes up for everything else.
And of course, Walter Koenig as Chekhov, but we've talked about him before lots.
Yeah.
Nothing new.
Okay, on to our ratings. We rate
the episodes out of five, and we're going to do an impression of Barbie here. How low can you go? IMDb give this a 6.7, which is in their bottom 10 episodes. So even IMDb doesn't like this.
I think they gave it a little bit of a higher rating than necessary, though.
Yeah, that's a 3.35 on our scale. So, yeah, let's see how low we can go. Sean?
All right, let's see what we got here. The good parts. We had Londo and Jacquard. That was good. They're always pretty great. We got the John and Elizabeth marriage backstory crap. That was okay, I guess. Pretty telegraphed there last week. What else do we have? It's always good to see Walter Koenig because, you know, original Star Trek, although his role here was garbage. I could see what they were going for. You know, like there was an idea behind the whole thing. It just fell flat. And if he had more time to write the episode, I'm sure it could have been great. But it wasn't great. And that's why it gets a 1.75.
Which means it is your worst episode ever.
Wow.
Of all time.
Hmm.
Dan.
Again, what he said. That's pretty much all I'm going to go for. Yeah, the Jacquard stuff is the only thing that I found interesting. I thought, you know, it's that's the reason why he's there, you know, in 20 years' time when he's sat on the throne with the little thing on his neck that we saw earlier last season. That was a fascinating thing. This is why he does it, because Jacquard feels like he's not doing enough. So that's why he did it. And I really enjoyed when Andreas Katsoulis was sort of like laughing his head off when he goes off to the corridor after Delenn tells him what the job's going to be. And he's sort of chuckling away and imagining the faces of the royal court when he walks in as the bodyguard. What else happened? Oh, yeah, Lockley. I suppose this episode's good for showing that even though she was on the wrong side of the war, she's still a good person because she helped out the telepaths. I kind of feel like maybe, you know, Franklin should have come up with the idea of the whole, oh, we could do the genetic gene testing for all these different diseases and things like this, mm-hmm. and then gives her the idea in the first place, and then and she asks for ideas and he gives it to her, because it kind of feels like he didn't think of that first. Like, that's a doctor thing to do, that she could hold in there for 60 days or whatever.
And Bester kind of rolled over on the whole thing too. He didn't put up a protest. It was just like, okay, fine.
Yeah, he just went along with it, and that's not Bester. Bester would find a way around it, and we could have had a bit of intrigue back and forth throughout the episode.
He could have read her mind and said, oh, this is a trick.
Exactly. Why didn't he read her mind? Like, she's not averse to having her mind read, because the Psi-Corps have jurisdiction in this case, so they can do more than a surface-level scan, as has been, you know, set in previous episodes. So, yeah, I don't get it. I really don't get this one. It's better put together than TKO. Again, I'm going to use TKO as my benchmark, which I think was a 1 out of 5. It's better. You know, at least it is relevant, because it will explain what happens to the telepaths in weeks to come, whatever happens for this season. So I suppose there is that. But yeah, it's 1.5 from me, because I'm just confused.
Yeah, I've just modified my score, and I don't know why. I really want to say this is the worst episode I've seen, because I wasn't invested in it. There were some a couple of scenes that I liked, and that was anything with Jacquard and Mallari, and I did actually like the scene with Lockley and Garibaldi in the brig. I thought that she's finally said, look, I'll put my cards on the table. And he sort of said the same thing and did the same thing and said, right, okay, look, you know, we're not going to get on. And they came to an understanding at the end of it, I think, that, yeah, they're not always going to agree, but they're basically on the same side, even though she wasn't originally and all this rubbish. So maybe there's which gives us our Garibaldi back, which I think is going to be a bit better than, you know, grumpy Garibaldi. Everything else, no. Byron, don't like him. His acting is wooden. Lockley is wooden, but at least she's new. You know, she's relatively new to this franchise. So, and it's, so for her, really, it's a first season. So maybe I'm being a bit harsh in saying she you know, it's her acting. I don't like. She is a competent actress. I mean, the person she's playing is hard nosed and by the book. So yeah, maybe that doesn't really sort of help. But I really, when he was going off on this, Byron was going off on this parable thing, I literally blanked out.
Lita is his willow tree. She bends but doesn't break.
Oh, God, I forgot that bit. Oh, the fucking willow tree. Oh, God.
And everywhere that Lita went... No, sorry, I thought that was a...
and everywhere a that rhyme Lita went, Byron was sure to follow.
Byron was on the take. I don't know. It was just, whatever. It didn't... And then the singing at the end. Oh, it went on too long.
It didn't make sense.
No, it was if it was the, like you say, it was like a Christmas thing. If this had been a Christmas episode, then maybe sort of it falls in. You know, if they were either showing Christmas or if it was being aired at Christmas, then it might have made some sense. But it didn't. And
the candles and the singing and the blah blah blah. Like no, thank you.
Oh, I don't know. I just why sing? I mean,
their hair looked fantastic though. You got to give them that.
Yeah, that length of hair by those candles not going to end well. So I was going to give this a one, which would have made it my worst ever episode, and then I looked at what I've previously given as low as that, and The Long Dark, which is the cryonic exploration vessel from 100 years ago, approaches Babylon 5, bringing with it blah, 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 blah. That was a 1.25. And I'm not sure whether it's... I think it might be worse than that. I'm not sure. It's very much on a par. So that is currently my worst ever. And Third Space was 1.5.
Oh, that was the movie, right?
Yeah, that was a movie. I'm going to give this a 1.25, which equals the worst. So I now have equal worst episodes. Because I just... The 0.25 is for the Lockley Garibaldi and Malari and Shakar bits.
Hmm.
Or rather, the one is for that. And the 0.25 is for the episode. It's I just could not invest myself in it. So there we go.
I was probably too generous in my ratings too, but there it is.
Yeah, too generous, and it's still the worst. Yeah, only down, taking it above TKO. I suppose TKO is better than this. At least there's a story there. There's a bit of action in it, But
and we got to see the Muay Thai.
The Muay Thai.
Yeah, I think I was so harsh on TKO because it was still the first season, so they still didn't work out what the characters were, and there were bits that are a bit offensive when we really break it down. And I suppose this episode wasn't offensive, it was just boring. Yep. That's all it was. I really didn't care. At least it wasn't a bad thing it was doing. It was just not entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, it's bad that it comes just after one of the best episodes we've ever seen.
Mm.
And then we have two of these that are really, really poor. These last two have been really poor. We've seen this before in seasons, haven't we, where we have really good episodes followed by really poor episodes. So maybe it'll start to pick up. We shall see.
Well, my favorite episode of all time is still coming up in the next few weeks. So
that's right. We say that. However, don't forget our watch order is slightly different to the DVD order. So
I have no idea when it appears, but
yeah, we will be recording that in November, and that will be released in January. So yes, people will find out which episode that is.
A surprise.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it holds up. It's been a while since I've seen it.
I remember it. So therefore, it's one of the very few season 5 episodes I actually remember. I haven't remembered either of these two.
And it turns out, watching these things to analyze it takes away a lot of the enjoyment.
Yes, it does. It does, because you're not watching it. You're making notes. You're scrolling down. You lose the flow. You lose that momentum. It's distracting. So, yes, it would be a thing to do in the future to come back to these episodes and re-rate them just by watching them.
Yes.
But
But anyway, that is the end of this episode, thankfully. Join us again next week when we will be discussing Season 5, Episode 7, Secrets of the Soul. If you have any thoughts on this episode, why not send in some feedback to the epsilon3@gmail.com. That's 3 spelled T-H-R-E-E, not the number. Or you can find us on our Facebook page. Just search for the Epsilon 3.
Well, if you have any other problems, any other questions at all, just ask.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.